Hello and welcome back to Send Parenting Balance podcast. My name is Katie Walker and I talk all things parenting children with autism, ADHD and or PDA. Today we are going to talk about discipline. You can only listen to the following podcast if you have an open mind. I feel like this is the topic that draws a line in the sand, and 50% of us stand one side and 50% of us stand the other side. So it's always really interesting to get people's feedback on the subject of discipline. However, when you're trying to give discipline to a child with special needs, so for example, autism, ADHD, and particularly PDA, it can feel like everything you try, no matter how consistent you are, just does not work. Whether that be discipline, consequences, or rewards, it can go both ways. I've got to be honest, that is exactly why this podcast is a winner, because this comes in from a disciplinary point of view, but through a different route altogether. So it's very PDA friendly. And I've got to admit, it's happened to me with my children completely by accident. You know, when you're parenting special needs children and you come up with these parenting hacks and you think, wow, that actually worked. And then you stick to them. And that's exactly what happened here. I used to discipline my children and it just was like banging my head against a brick wall every single time. I was stuck in such a vicious circle, I had to get out. And I will tell you why. So, I don't discipline my special needs kids. And even if they weren't special needs, I still wouldn't discipline them in the ways I used to with negative consequences. Let's dig into this controversial topic. I also don't reward them. Ew, let's discuss this further because I can feel people moving in their seats like, okay, where's she going with this? You can't teach children to behave better by making them feel worse. Let's just say that again. You can't teach children to behave better by making them feel worse. When children feel better, they behave better. It is such a fine line between being their friend but also being their parent. It's a combination of both at the right times with the same consistent response each and every time, and it feels like a constant battle. In all of my years of family support workers, working in schools, being a SEND advocate, as well as a parent to three neurospicy children, I am still amazed when parents question why children don't respond the way they should to discipline. Let's unlock this a little more. So there's no right or wrong way, right? I mean, if you're doing something now at home that involves discipline and consequences and it works, then keep it. We don't want to change anything that's working, especially if children have autism or PDA, because they like structure, they like routine, they like to know what they expect. So if things are working for you, keep them exactly as they are. If things aren't working for you, that's where this podcast might come in helpful. So, there is no right or wrong way. We're not necessarily doing it wrong at all. We all start off parenting our child, perhaps how we were parented ourselves or how we want to parent. And that may involve some sort of discipline. For example, you will sit at the table while you eat your dinner and stay seated until everybody at the table has finished. Otherwise, I'll take your phone away. That kind of expectation with a consequence if it's not followed. There is a rule, there is a boundary, and there's a disciplinary action if it's not followed and it's really clear with the child. That's how I was brought up. And that is kind of how a lot of people talk about parenting. So let me challenge you. Let me challenge you on this thinking. Why is this rule a rule? Why is it important that your child sit at the table until you have all finished? They will likely sit there whining that they want to get down, swinging back and forth on their chair, listening to boring adult conversations, answering boring questions about their school day. Is this a positive interaction between you and the children? They're only there because they don't want to lose their phone. So is that a positive experience for them and for you? Perhaps they enjoy sitting at the table with you, in which case there's no need for the boundary and disciplinary threat of taking away the phone anyway. But wouldn't it be better if none of that needed to be said, and if they chose to sit at the table with you and ask about your day? Now, wouldn't that be awesome? Yes. If they chose that. So, how do we get them to choose that? Is it through discipline, as mentioned above, or is it through making dinner time fun and engaging and changing the environment of dinner time? Is it about teaching children about how to make decisions themselves through being their authentic selves? Quite often, we believe that if an adult says X, the child has to complete it or they will lose out. It's the child, the adult says, and the child follows. It's missing the teaching. It's missing the teaching the child to make decisions for themselves, making some mistakes in the process, and about autonomy and respect, which, by the way, goes both ways. It's teaching a child to follow rules. What can happen is when a child gets to an age where they need not follow the rules or get brave enough to push them to one side and not follow them in the first place, they can really push boundaries. Now, suddenly, when they reach this stage, they're suddenly making their own decisions against your will, may I add, but without the knowledge of decision making, authenticity, boundaries, respect, and autonomy. Because the parent has been busy giving them rules to follow rather than allowing them to make choices for themselves, showing that respect to the other person, showing their authentic selves. It's a really interesting concept. Stay with me. So, with the example of asking the child to sit at the table until everybody has finished their dinner, and we all have been made aware the child does not want to be sitting there, they're making that very clear. What if we said to a child, I'd really like you to sit and eat dinner with me because I'd love to hear about your day, and then you can choose the pudding afterwards if you like? Would they be more likely to want to sit at the table with you, to want to wait for the pudding to come out? You were to say to them, I'd love to tell you about this thing that I did today while you were at school. Over dinner, do you think that they'd want to hear about it? Would it then become a choice that they've made rather than a rule that they have to follow? Now, if you're like me and you have neurospicy children, you may find that over the years you have put a disciplinary rule in place and it's ignored. So you take away the phone, it's still ignored. Okay, well, you're not going to have dinner then, it's still ignored. You will go straight to your bed, it's still ignored. So then what? Where do you go once you've run out of options? You're giving consequences, you're giving disciplinary actions, but the child is not bothered. So why do we think this is beneficial to them or you? You keep taking stuff away, they are just not bothered by it. It's an interesting concept, really, because that's where I got with my daughter. It didn't matter how big the thing was that I was giving a consequence for. It didn't matter how many days I was taking away the phone for. A PDA child will definitely push you to your limits, I can promise you, and it really won't bother them. Now, it was really important for me to try and understand this and unpick this a little bit more. And I can tell you for sure that when your limits are pushed like this as a parent and nothing is going in, it's not due to bad behaviour. It's due to the reward of not doing as you say, being better than the discipline. So, for example, if I have asked my child to go to school, and they are not going to school, and I have said, right, well, you're not going to have your friend around this weekend, and they're still not going to school. Right, well, I'm going to take your phone away for a day, and they still won't go to school. Right, that's your phone for a whole week, and they still won't go to school, and I've got no more leverage. I have nowhere else to go. So the result is that she's still not going to school anyway. The likelihood is that it's not bad behavior that's making her not do it, it's just that school is so bad. She would rather have the discipline of no phone for a week than to go to school because she struggles so much in that environment. So sometimes when your PDA child is really digging their heels in, like really, 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 then you need to look at, okay, what is it that I'm asking of them? Now, in our eyes, if you are non-neurospicy, it may seem like something really small and silly, something as small as brushing your teeth. But if you have listened to my sensory processing disorder podcast or certainly been on any of my support courses, you'll know that brushing a teeth is really difficult for children that have sensory processing disorder for loads and loads of reasons. And so if you are not winning with that battle, it will be because it is really tricky for them to overcome. And simply trying to discipline them or giving them a demand is never going to work. If you are doing all you are doing and putting in every single consequence and nothing is working, you have to ask yourself the question why. So back to sitting at the table then. Sitting at the table is therefore so bad, is it? Well, do you know what it could be if you had a child with ARFID or sensory processing disorder? It could be that the table, the foods of other people's plates are really affecting a sensory impaired individual. It could be the PDA demand of doing as you've been asked in the first place. It could be the overwhelm of all the conversation and the bickering between siblings and just being too loud. It can be too much of a demand after attending school all day. It could just be the fact that everybody is talking with eye contact and the child is expected to answer questions. Whatever it is, going without their phone or their iPad time is clearly a better alternative. So you'd have to ask yourself, is it really worth the battle and the misery of always disciplining a child in cases like this? It really can end up being a daily vicious circle. So in this case then, I'd really like it if you were to sit and eat dinner with me because I'd love to hear about your day. You can choose the pudding afterwards if you like. Would this be better? No discipline mentioned, no demand. If the response was no, then what have you lost? Because it was going to be no anyway, even with the discipline in place. So let's look at some other examples that have come up recently that we can kind of put everything that I've said into practice, really. What does that look like in the real world? I am a huge lover of examples. I listen to so many things, and it's all very well from a life coaching perspective or a counselling perspective telling me something or giving me a statement or giving me a phrase. But to actually then put that into practice and give me a real life example gives me a visual and gives me something to work from when I'm moving forwards. So hopefully this will help. I've been working with a family recently and they don't mind me sharing this example. They have a teenage daughter and they are very concerned at the age of social media and phone safety and dating apps because children seem to be on these from a very young age, Snapchat and knowing of people's locations, and it just feels really overwhelming. Now, although this podcast is not long enough to cover cyber safety for teens because this is such a big topic, we can unpick this one particular example. So, a child sent this daughter a rude message, and the mum did not approve upon it through going through the daughter's phone secretly. And upon talking to her, the daughter about it became an argument, and then the response was to take away the daughter's phone and to argue. Now, in my opinion, this can only go one way. The daughter will likely delete messages as soon as they come through in future, or hide them, or lie to her parents in fear of being told off or having the phone taken away. Of course, it wasn't her fault in the first place. It was the other child's fault. In fact, the girl at this stage has done nothing wrong and yet has been disciplined for it. An alternative could have been to open up conversation about the rude messages, dating apps, social media whoopsies, and have a laugh when doing so, using other people's stories, bonding with the teen girl over these stories and sharing perhaps your own experiences, or if you have friends that have had any experiences. And this will likely mean that the teen will open up and approach you if anything comes through in future. Perhaps even ask for your advice when and if it happens to them. Hopefully, it wouldn't. Social media is here to stay. So it doesn't need to be this big bad thing. However, it does need to be approached with caution. And in this case, kindness, autonomy, authenticity, and respect can be taught and shared, opening the door for all future communication when something cautious, even dangerous, may occur. In my opinion, taking away the child's phone that hasn't actually sent anything rude themselves is looking for the child to no longer communicate openly and honestly in the future. Let's use another example. Let's look at disciplining for school attendance. School attendance is stressful. Us parents get pulled through it. And if attendance is low, therefore it can increase stress levels massively for the whole family. Meaning us parents might be slightly pissed off from the offset. However, it's been proven time and time again that forcing a child into school rarely fixes the problem long term and only hinders attendance overall. It increases anxiety. Therefore, placing in disciplinary actions will likely prove unsuccessful long term, although initially they may seem to be working in the short term. Because just like eating at the dinner table example, if staying off school is better than the child having their phone, then discipline isn't going to work. The only thing that will work is to break down why school attendance is a problem and fix the issue. Discipline won't fix the issue. It will push the issues faced under the carpet for the child to deal with on their own. Discipline just teaches the child to follow rules, your rules, society's rules, school rules. If you have a child with PDA, you too may have learned that discipline is a completely ineffective way of dealing with any issues, particularly with school. While we're on the subject of school, let's go back to what I said in the very beginning, and that is that I don't reward either. I don't reward for school attendance. In fact, I don't reward at all. I'll tell you why I don't. Rewarding for school attendance. Well, if school is really bad and the child is masking or not telling you, or something's going on that you're not sure about, then I wouldn't really want to reward that. I wouldn't want to reward going to school or good school reports based on the fact that school attendance can cause anxiety, panic attacks, and sensory overload for some autistic and PDA individuals. I do reward my kids, but because I love them, not because it's earned. They don't have to earn my love and praise. It's there regardless of what they do. It's unconditional, which is really important, and always will be. If Emily asks me for £20 to pop out shopping with a friend, then if I've got it, yeah, sure, that would be lovely. If Harry asks me for some Pokemon cards and I've got the money, then yes, I'd love to give him some Pokemon cards and we can sort them into his wonderful categories that he has. Categories is his thing. If Emily asks me for a slime set, sure, I'd love to do that with you. Let's. There's no pocket money to be earned in my house because I love spending time with them. I love to spoil them if I can. They don't have to earn my love or make sure they've got certain grades at school or certain attendance levels at school in order to get these treats because that would be conditional. Only last week at Harry's school, I was dropping Harry off to school, and they all have their classroom doors open in the morning. So you kind of walk past all the classroom doors until you get to your classroom and you drop your child at the door. We're usually one of the last in, so all the other children tend to be already setting up for the day and sat at their tables, sat in their seats, and the teacher tends to be getting started for the day. I walked past one classroom and their door was still open. And there was a little boy in there, this was not Harry's classroom, who had knocked a pen and a register book or something off of the table, just accidentally with his arm. And the teacher leant down to his level, really close to his face, and shouted at him so loudly it made me stop and stare. And she shouted, "Now I suggest you pick that up." She saw me looking and instantly shut her classroom door. And I had this funny feeling in my tummy. I wish that I had said, "Would you speak to a member of staff in the staff room that way?" Of course, we all know the answer. When teachers do this in classroom, it doesn't only embarrass and perhaps frighten the child momentarily, but the other children take note too. And I can guarantee that in a class like that, most of the children will be too shy to put their hand up and answer questions or make complaints or bring up issues in fear of being shouted at in this way. In this particular case, did discipline help? Did shouting at the boy help? Of course, it was only an accident in the first place. Unlikely not. The amount of SEND children that I work with that won't answer questions in class once they've heard a member of staff speak to any student in this way is shocking and actually really sad. It is then these children that go under the radar in fear of speaking up. So when teachers speak to children like this in classrooms, It can affect the whole class massively. We should be asking questions at school. Children should be setting boundaries with peers. They should be able to challenge knowledge. All of this should be able to be done in school because this is the biggest learning experience for them. So to shut that down due to staff members shouting is really quite sad. In this example, that type of discipline does not work. One further example of something that happened recently. My daughter is at the stage and the age of pushing boundaries, and it's my job to ascertain what is naughty behaviour and what is ADHD and autism behaviour, all of which are different. On this occasion, it was a mixture of ADHD, spontaneity, and pushing boundaries together. She was with a friend who likely also has ADHD, and so the two of them together, and sometimes it can cause randomness when they're out, can be a bit chaotic. On this occasion, I was told that she was going to the local shopping centre to spend some of her Christmas vouchers. I gave her £20 to get the bus and some lunch with her friend. It occurred to me through social media that they'd actually decided to get the train somewhere much further than our local shopping centre. With only an hour and a half until dark, I was not best impressed. I had two options. I could call her up and shout at her for being dangerous, tell her to come home right away, and that she would likely be grounded, or I could try a kinder approach. Now, I can tell you now, the first firm approach would have meant that she'd likely would have turned off her phone and continued along her way on the train to somewhere I didn't want her to be. Only this time, with no phone on and with me unable to then track her and keep her safe. Alternatively, I can call her and request that she get off at the next stop and come straight home because what she was doing was not okay due to the time of day that she was going and that it was going to be dark soon. I assured her that she wasn't in trouble and that I would happily take her to the further shopping centre that she wanted to go, but safely and in the daytime. Now, of course, she then came home and I was able to talk to her about why it could have been dangerous once she was home. Discipline in this case would have just made matters so much worse. I'm a huge fan of teaching children how to make their own decisions and becoming their own people. Of course, they're going to make mistakes along the way, and of course, mistakes are allowed. They are okay. We don't want children anxious to do anything in case they make a mistake, and this can sometimes happen if discipline is overused. Coming off of computer games is another big problem in many households. Some people are under the opinion that when their child needs to come off the game, they need to do so as soon as they're told. For example, if they need to be somewhere or if dinner is ready. Now, although I totally understand that life has to continue around the gaming, it is a big expectation that can create a lot of meltdowns and a lot of drama. The computer games nowadays are different than when we were young. I'm 41 years old for reference. They are live games. That means a child may have been progressing through a game for 15 minutes or more. Perhaps they may only be 10 minutes off of thinking they might win. And if they come out of the game instantly, the game doesn't pause and it continues without them. I can imagine that if a child does come off when asked, they perhaps won't be in the moment or want to chat to you because they will be worried about the game continuing without them. And I get that. Imagine you were most of the way through a football match or a really good movie, and right at the end, 10 minutes before the end, it was switched off. You'd likely be really annoyed too. Or even worse, let's say the football match continued or the movie continued, but you had to go and sit in another room to talk to somebody about their day. Would you be interested? Like, I think that would be unlikely. I always judge at home if there's time for a whole game before the next expectation, and that's how we communicate in my house because gaming is here to stay. So we need to try and live alongside it peacefully. For example, yes, you have time for two games before dinner, but then I would really like it if you would come down. Another example, and I'm sure he won't mind me using him, is of a friend. And I've used this example before, I think, on social media. And I've said this out loud prior to this podcast. We were both having a conversation about spending money in the arcade and giving our children money. From an early age, my kids have had their £10 and off they go. I don't tell them what they can and can't spend. I'm not micromanaging them. They are intelligent enough to figure out how quickly £10 will go if they A, spend it on the 2p machines, or B, spend it on the £1 and £2 machines. I tend to find they go half and half. Initially, when I first gave them their very first £10 and let them go into the arcade, they did waste it all in 5 minutes, and they learned through their own error that them watching their older siblings wasn't so much fun. They picked it up pretty quick, and now they've learned and they can go in and kind of do it how they want to. My friend, however, with much older children, was saying how he would never do that, and he would need to be on his kids the whole time so they don't waste their money so quickly. So I challenged him. I always challenge him. I bet he gets sick of it. I said, "So what if they spend it all in 1 minute? Then they won't do it again. Then you don't have to micromanage them every single time you go to the arcade. They can be independent enough and have autonomy and be their own authentic selves and have learned what it is they want to spend their money on." If he keeps heavily controlling them on what they spend it on, what do you think will happen the first time they do get free rein? They're just going to spend it all in 1 minute. He is literally postponing the learning. Kids aren't supposed to do just as they are told. They are supposed to find out why safely and make errors safely along the way to form their own decision-making skills. I could talk absolutely hours on this topic and how, if you gave me a scenario, I could think of an alternative way to handle it to promote independence, even if the child didn't have additional needs. Of course, if you listen to this and decide to take your foot off of the discipline gas, change takes time. It doesn't happen overnight because you're teaching children lessons. You're teaching them how to handle life, how to make decisions, that it's okay to make mistakes. I remember when Emily was little. She has combined ADHD and autism, and that is a really big struggle in my household. I disciplined her all the time before I knew about her diagnosis. I was always on her case, and she was always missing out. Our relationship was super negative, and nobody was happy. When I first took my foot off the discipline gas and changed my approach to a more respectful, nurturing, and approachable way, she, of course, went too far the other way initially. I mean, why wouldn't she? But over time, she moved back towards me. She was about 7 or 8 at the time, and I think it took about 3 months to completely switch things around. There are always people that advocate discipline, and I completely get that. If it works for your child and you're not looking to change anything, then absolutely stick to what you have in place already. Don't rock the boat, so to speak. But if you have difficulties with children following boundaries and rules, then perhaps some of the ideas I've mentioned through my own examples would be better suited, rather than an unhappy child and unhappy parents both fighting to gain control, which is very tricky within a PDA household. A lot of people will say to me, but surely there must be consequences. And do we need an actual consequence though? Let's just brainstorm some examples. In my opinion, no. If you already have a system that works and continue to use it, we don't try and fix what's not broken, especially with children with autism, because they like routine and in fact thrive on it. But I would suggest that a meltdown is consequence in itself enough. Racing heart rate, sweating, nervous system in fight or flight, likely they may hit out or break something, which they will feel sad about at another time. They may already have a hard time making friends because of this. My daughter speaks of her senses increasing so much that she can't ground herself where she is. So when she is emotionally dysregulated, the noises get louder, the lights get brighter, her hands can shake, and her head feels fuzzy. It leads to a panic attack. So let me ask you, do they need another consequence? Not in 99% of cases. No, I don't think they do. It may be better instead to change their immediate environment so that these feelings and outbursts don't happen often. That would help a lot more than a consequence. Let me explain. In the case of school, Most consequences don't suit at all. In fact, they're very interesting to unpick. I've worked in schools and my mind is bamboozled. Sometimes in secondary school, a child is removed from class because of their behaviour. They're removed from a noisy class of 30 children, full of demands, full of lights, full of noise, full of smells, into a small space on their own, or maybe a small group of students, perhaps facing the wall in like these little sections with a member of staff in a quiet room overseeing all of them, so that then they get a bit of help with their work too. Now, I would say that an autistic child would prefer the isolation room actually to the actual classroom, wouldn't you? So if you have a child that's constantly in the isolation room, I would perhaps look at why that is. And that consequence certainly is unlikely going to solve the issue. It's looking at the wrong issue. A little bit like the consequence of going up a step on the behaviour policy. So in my son's school, it starts at one, it goes up to five. He often hovers around the three, if I'm honest. And, you know, if you get to four or four, you're going to be missing out on your break time. So, how helpful is this to a child that likely needs to sensory seek, to find push and pull activities, to run off steam, to practice social interactions, to get out of a small, smelly, and noisy, unpredictable classroom? This I actually see as discrimination to a child's sensory needs, to be honest. Therefore, if there are plenty of behaviour issues in the afternoon, it's likely going to be because of this exact consequence. So, because the school have made the child miss the playtime, there will be more behaviour issues in the afternoon because that child hasn't been able to sensory seek, do their push and pull activities, run off steam, and get out of the noisy classroom that was causing the behaviour issues in the first place. Therefore, the consequence creates behaviour that's undesirable. And they end up in this vicious circle with the child. Also, what's more sad, in both of these examples, there's no learning opportunities. There's no learning opportunities or validation for what the child is going through. You know, what could we do if this happens again? Conversations, restorative conversations. What can we do to stop it from happening in the first place? Conversations. There's none of that. It's just discipline. And in both cases, it's completely not working. Another argument is that let's say you have a consequence at home for breaking a toy. Therefore, the child misses out on iPad time. Now, it's likely if you have a child with autism, ADHD, and/or PDA that the child uses the iPad to emotionally regulate. So again, to take this away may lead to further meltdowns. These further meltdowns can therefore create this vicious cycle where you're constantly taking things away and there's constant meltdowns because the only thing we can really take away is tech because that's the only thing they really, really value because that's what they need to emotionally regulate. Now, however, I'm going to say a little however here. There are natural consequences. And natural consequences can be a huge learning curve for children and a wonderful communication opportunity between you and your child. And they happen all the time if we allow them to happen. And we can only do this if we're not micromanaging or kind of having that helicopter parent style of parenting. Let's have a look at some. So, my child has broken a Fire tablet or a Nintendo Switch at least once or twice. Those that have been on my courses will know the exact number. Now, I have to save up to replace this. So, my child, if he breaks his Switch or his tablet, would need to go without for a period of time. And I would openly say to my child, without blaming them for breaking it. I just can't afford a new one, so I'm gonna have to save up. Now, this will be enough consequence for the child because my child would have to wait likely 8 weeks before I could replace something like that. And this will be torture for him, and he will know it, and he will understand, and he will feel it every single day, multiple times a day for that whole 8 weeks. And that is more than enough of a natural consequence. Upon giving him the new one, I will remind him of how long he has had to wait and how we need to be more careful next time, reminding him that when he feels mad or emotionally dysregulated, he should come and find me and we can emotionally regulate together. My daughter once hurt her friend. It was her only friend because social situations were very difficult for her. And when this happened, it was a week before her birthday. And so, lo and behold, on her actual birthday, her friend obviously didn't want to come to her sleepover. Now, there is a natural consequence and a lesson. I didn't need to angrily tell my daughter off. I did support her through a terrible birthday, and we went and got Chinese instead. And she really hurt for what she did, and she was incredibly sorry, and she never did it again. There are plenty of natural consequences and learning opportunities in life without adding any extra, in my opinion. So, just as I started, remember, you can't teach children to behave better by making them feel worse. When a child feels better, they behave better. What an amazing topic. I could talk about this for weeks on end. Please do feel free, reach out, email me, challenge me, give me your ideas, give me your thoughts. This is a very controversial topic. And you can find me at my website at www.sendparentingbalance.com. Now, please remember that my Breaking Barriers Building Belief support course is available to book. They run every 6 weeks. Check out the website for more info. It's not a parenting course because you're already an amazing parent, but it is a support course about neurospicy behaviors and the challenges. And of course, it also looks at parental well-being too, something that gets completely overlooked so that you don't feel alone. Support is always available, and there is a whole package of support available. Have a look over on my website. You can also sign up to the website for free. It doesn't cost anything. Sometimes there's discounts, sometimes there's topics and blogs that go out too. So do sign up for free on the homepage of the website, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. I hope you have the most wonderful day and that you are very kind to yourself. See you next time.